It's just politics.
Just politics.
Just politics.
I'm Zoe Clark.
And I'm Rick Pluta.
And Rick, this week, Mitt Romney was back in Michigan. He made three campaign stops throughout the state.
Yep, Frankenmuth, DeWitt, which is outside of Lansing, and Holland, where he spoke at the state park and the Lake Michigan shoreline with the park's somewhat famous lighthouse as a backdrop.
Right, a very nice background. Now, Romney, of course, was in the state last month as well, and he talked about the economy. He was talking about Michigan's economy in particular, saying that things were not good here.
That's right. And we've talked about this before, this tension between the messaging of a Republican governor like Rick Snyder, who's saying, look, we're making changes, things are improving, what we're doing is working, and Mitt Romney coming into the state and saying, you're not doing that well, that, you know, it's basically a message of pessimism and making the case for change.
Right. Snyder said something like, we are the comeback state, of course, that relentless positive action. And then right after that, Romney got on stage and said, no, 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 things aren't that good. Well, this week here in Michigan, the message changed a little bit.
It did. That we have detected a subtle transition in the Romney message. And here's what he had to say when he was in Frankenmuth.
It was a treat listening to your governor. People wondered whether he'd be able to turn this state around. I mean, there were real problems when he came into office. Unemployment like 15%, businesses leaving Michigan. People wondered whether this state could get back on track. And this guy has come into office, has made Michigan an attractive place for entrepreneurs and small businesses again, has worked to fix schools, has kept taxes down on employers so they hire more people so they're better wages. That's kind of how these things go. And what we need is to have someone in Washington that will do for Washington what's being done right here in Michigan, and I will.
We got Snyder, now we need you!
Okay, so we've got Snyder, now we need you. Is this the new message, this message that Michigan, you have an executive branch that's run by a Republican, that's what the nation needs now as well?
Yeah, it was kind of becoming a tougher sell as the economy slowly starts to improve. And it's not just a problem in Michigan that Mitt Romney was running into this, you know, same issue in Wisconsin, where there's a Republican governor, in Ohio, where there's a Republican governor, in Florida, where there's a Republican governor.
All states considered swing states.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, here in Michigan, where the car companies are doing well, manufacturing is doing well, that they needed to make an adjustment. You know, you look at our employment rate, and 8% is still high, but the jobs numbers are generally moving in the right direction. You even look at the recent uptick in the state's jobless rate, the first time it's gone up in something like a year.
Right.
But it's due largely to people reengaging with the workforce and looking for jobs, even if it's just seasonal employment. And that, Zoe, suggests optimism. And the Romney campaign needs to acknowledge that and if possible, capitalize on it. And also, one thing that the Romney campaign likes about the success story in Michigan is the association with Rick Snyder, a guy like Romney with a strong business background. And so they think that this Michigan turnaround message is one that could resonate here and in other places.
Okay, so the campaign thinks it will work. Will it? I mean, is this something that you can shift like this and then have everyone go, oh, yeah, that's how we should think about it?
Well, you know, Democrats would love to continue the theme of, you know, Mitt Romney being pessimistic about the economy, Republicans trying to, you know, put the basket over the economic successes that we're seeing in order to gain some kind of electoral advantage. And this would also, if it works, take that away and take that issue back. And it's a nice one for a presidential candidate, because by the time you get to November, you don't want to just be running against something. You want to be running for something. And this gives Mitt Romney something to talk about where he's for something.
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things that everyone talked about President Obama in 2008 was that he was for change. And yet with Romney, a lot of people are saying, no, this isn't about Romney. This is actually a referendum on the president.
And so the new message, and I've gotten this from the Romney campaign, and they acknowledge that it is a shift in messaging, is Republican governors who took office a year and a half ago have equaled positive change, and Mitt Romney deserves the chance to do the same thing in the White House.
Turn and face the strain. Changes. We wanna be a.
Well, Rick, let's move on from the messaging over the economy to messaging over, well, I don't really want to say it. Do you want to say it?
I don't want to say it.
All right, so here we go, you guys. We have to say it one time. Vagina! Vagina!
Well, we'll just let State Senator Rebecca Warren say it for us. We, of course, are talking about Vaginagate.
That's what it. That's what it's become, and it really has been kind of a public relations disaster for House Republicans since last week they imposed a one-day silencing on two state representatives, Barb Byrum and Lisa Brown, for what they said and what they did during a pretty heated debate about some anti-abortion measures. And over the course of it, Lisa Brown used, well, should we just play it?
I'm flattered that you're all so interested in my vagina, but no means no.
That's the statement that got everyone hot and bothered and attracted this punishment. And the problem for State House Republicans is that this punishment attracted, by the time it was over, worldwide attention, and a pretty parochial political fight in Michigan suddenly became an international cause and cultural event, which culminated early this week in a performance of the Vagina Monologues from the steps of the state capitol in Lansing, attracted thousands of people and international attention.
Right. Okay. So this messaging was just handled so poorly by Republican leadership. We also saw a lot of sort of different...
There's no one who's not on the payroll of the House Republicans that I've met who thinks that this was well handled.
Right. And not just that, but they certainly also didn't stick to one message, right?
Well, that was part of the problem, that when the punishment was imposed last week, on the first day, it was the use of that word. And that was the message from the top down. People said it was offensive, that there were children nearby, that it should have never been used. Over the weekend, it became clear that wasn't working. And so by Monday, it had morphed into, well, the offense was actually was the use of the phrase no means no, which is associated with date rape. And that was, you know, now considered outside the boundaries of decorum. And so, I mean, that even there, they weren't consistent. And, you know, this, Zoe, has not changed anyone's mind about abortion and reproductive rights, of course. But what it has done, and this is what's got some of the Republican leaders so incensed at what the House Republicans have done here, is it's given the progressives something to galvanize around, and it's also created a lot of attention from other parts of the country where people are inclined to write campaign checks, like, you know, the East and the West Coast, for these races in Michigan. Lisa Brown is running for the Oakland County Clerk's position against an incumbent Republican. She can certainly expect to benefit. Her campaign can certainly expect to benefit financially from this. Certainly, the House Democratic Caucus can expect to benefit financially from this. And progressives, the Democratic Get Out the Vote effort, can benefit from this, because now it gives progressives something to galvanize around. This was essentially, you know, a lot of Republican leaders think this was essentially an in-kind contribution by the House Republicans to Democratic Get Out the Vote efforts in November.
But let's take that a step further, though, because I think there is something to talk about here in terms of how the Democrats were able to play their hand. As poorly as the Republican leadership in the House handled this situation, I think it's fair to say that Democrats took this and ran. And one of the things that you and I have talked about, oh, I don't know, for the past year, since the House and Senate have been controlled by Republicans, as has, of course, the executive branch, that Democrats haven't really found an issue to rally around. They haven't gotten people excited other than saying what the Republicans are doing is bad. And I'm just wondering, should they get some credit now after a year of saying that they haven't done enough to sort of rally the base? Do they get credit that within 72 hours of this happening, they have Eve Ensler on the Capitol steps?
Is it the author of the vagina monologue?
Is it time that we give Democrats some credit for playing politics and having it work?
Well, you know what? It's an issue that was handed to them. That you know, really, House Republicans largely did this to themselves. House Democrats and Michigan Democrats did not let the opportunity just go by. And they're continuing to use it. We're now seeing this issue being used in the messaging on Supreme Court races, where the Democrats have nominated women to run for the vacancies there. That, you know, we're seeing it in congressional races, where this is just turned up in everyone's campaign and fundraising materials.
Okay, well, let's continue to talk about some other campaigns that are happening around the state. Let's do a quick update on the 11th Congressional District. Of course, that was once possible presidential candidate Thaddeus McCotter's seat. No longer. Of course, the establishment, Republican establishment in Michigan got...
That's right, Thothad.
...got behind former State Senator Nancy Cassis to run against Carrie Bentivoglio. And yet, just yesterday, Dave Ajima endorsed Carrie Bentivoglio, the Tea Party candidate there, instead of Nancy Cassis. What's happening here?
Dave Ajima, the conservative Republican from West Michigan, who was basically able to rally the very conservative wing of the party to unseat an incumbent Republican National Committeeman and win that seat as well. And what we're seeing in the 11th Congressional District, where the Republican leadership of Oakland and Wayne counties, the Republican establishment, was distrustful of Carrie Bentivoglio, that they're afraid that he's going to make what is a solidly Republican seat competitive in November when they don't want that to happen. You know, another thing, too, is that is a very wealthy congressional district, that member of Congress is going to be expected to do a lot of fundraising. And there's some skepticism that that was a task that Bentivoglio was up to. And so what's happened is that it has become an acid test of the authority of the 11th District Republican establishment, and maybe even the Michigan Republican establishment, versus its Tea Party wing. And that's what we're seeing with the Ajima endorsement of Carrie Bentivoglio over the establishment's preferred write-in candidate, Nancy Cassis, a former state senator.
Let's move over to the west side of the state now. And how could we forget, Rick, the 76th
the fighting state. 76th.
The 76th state district, Grand Rapids. Of course, we are talking about the turncoat. Some called him the Judas, Roy Schmidt, of course, who moved from being a Democrat to a Republican at the last minute. And now Democrats are rallying around a candidate to replace him on the Democratic side. That would be Winnie Brinks.
Yes. That what happened was, just to quickly remind people, is that there was a Democrat who filed at the exact same time. Matter of fact, the papers were delivered by the exact same person who delivered Representative Schmidt's papers withdrawing from the Democratic primary and putting himself into the Republican primary. And he looked like a patsy. And under the glare of publicity that the candidate dropped out, leaving a vacancy. And so the Democrats now have to find a write-in. And they bypassed a couple of well-known local political names, a former state representative and a county commissioner, and decided to go with a fresh face, Winnie Brinks. And she's active with her local PTA, but that's sort of the depth of her political involvement to date. So it's going to be
political unknown.
Yeah. And so what it's going to be is a fresh face against a seasoned politician, and one that Democrats are going to say who plays a lot of political games. And that's the campaign that they're going to wage in that Grand Rapids area seat. Winnie Brinks will have to get at least 5% of the total Democratic primary vote. So she has to get 5% of whoever gets the most votes in the Democratic primary, and that will probably be U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow, in order to qualify. But Democrats say they're pretty sanguine about it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about ballots in this summer of sort of ballot mania. The group The People Should Decide says they have enough signatures to put a proposal on the November ballot that would require a vote on a new international bridge crossing. Their spokesman says they've collected more than 420,000 and they only need some 322,000.
That's right. And also the campaign to amend the state constitution to allow 8 new casinos. They say they have a lot more than they'll need in order to qualify for the ballot. The campaign to boost the state's renewable energy portfolio, which is the standards that utilities have to meet for using renewable energy sources to generate electricity, that they say they're doing okay. The Protect Our Jobs campaign, that's the one that would preempt in the state constitution a right-to-work law, reverse a lot of the Republican efforts to create some new limitations about union organizing and fundraising, that they've filed 685,000 signatures, more than twice what they need. That's a union-backed effort, and that's filed more than 685,000 signatures, more than twice what they need. So they think that they're sitting pretty. But now the opposition, the business-backed Citizens Protecting Michigan's Constitution, has filed its challenge.
I laugh because aren't these names just great? I mean,
yeah, these are always, you know, Citizens for.
And protection. There's a lot of protection of jobs, too.
A lot of citizens protecting something and a lot of jobs. It could sort of become a board game where you just take those and put them into a tumbler and pull them out and see what you come up with. Jobs protecting Michigan citizens.
Yes, Michigan jobs protection are we. We could go for a Yoda theme or something like that. So there's this coalition of business groups that's now asking.
They filed, and they say this shouldn't even go to the Board of State Canvassers, that bipartisan commission that approves questions for the ballot. They say that Secretary of State Ruth Johnson should slam the coffin lid on that right now, because this proposal is just too big and too sweeping to be concisely described on the ballot, and that it basically amounts to a constitutional convention on the ballot, which is not allowed.
And then finally, of course, the ever controversial PA4, the emergency manager law repeal, that has gotten really sort of sticky with the Michigan Court of Appeals.
Well, the Court of Appeals, the entire Court of Appeals, has said we're not going to accede to a request to convene a super panel of judges to decide whether or not to reverse a precedent that says a ballot campaign only needs to be in substantial compliance with the law, that you can't use a technicality to keep something off the ballot. But the groups that are opposed to this, also backed by business, say that they are going to go to the state Supreme Court, which is not limited by earlier court precedents. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of this going to court, which is often the case, before we get final determinations on whether some of these questions will make the November ballot.
Yeah. And Rick, I mean, you know, some people may be listening and going, why do these ballots matter? This is just more to read in November when I get to the polls. But you've been covering Michigan politics for, you know, some 25 years. Have you ever seen this many ballot proposals? It's A, just sort of hard to keep track of everything. And B, it feels like people are sort of just taking things into their own hands, skirting the legislature.
Well, actually, we've seen this happening more and more, and people have written about the perils of government by ballot question. And it's probably, you know, a lot of people would be, you know, pretty disturbed to know, you know, how little of this is actually grassroots citizen-initiated efforts and things that are actually created by unions, by businesses. As a matter of fact, you know, the casino ballot proposal, the campaign against it, against that particular ballot proposal, part of their message is that the Michigan Constitution should not be used to create business opportunities.
Well, and that's the same message from the people who are against the renewable energy mandate. Mm-hmm. I believe that, you know, they are saying that we shouldn't mandate the state's energy use through a constitutional amendment.
But nobody seems ready to step in and offer up something saying, well, maybe it's time to make the ballot less accessible to the interests who want to use it to mold state government in the direction that to bend state government in the direction that they'd like.
At the same time, though, this week, the group that was trying to put a ballot proposal to legalize marijuana, it sounds like they're not going to be able to get enough signatures.
No, that they've acknowledged that they're not going to make their targets.
Right. Okay. Well, let's end this week, Rick, talking about a couple former lawmakers that passed away. Some big names in Michigan politics.
Let's talk first about Joe Young Jr., who was part of a mini political dynasty from Detroit that he actually inherited his father's state house seat, and then after redistricting, his father ran again for the legislature and won. And so father and son served alongside each other in the 1980s and the early 1990s before Joe Young Sr. died of cancer during the era of shared power, that 55-55 split in the state House of Representatives, where Democrats and Republicans literally passed the gavel back and forth. Joe Young Jr. Died in Wisconsin, where he had relocated with his family at the age of 62. And, you know, we were talking earlier about the tensions in the state House of Representatives and lawmakers being silenced for what they said in a debate about abortion. And it's, to me at least, a little ironic that the passing of former state representative and state senator Bill Van Riggenmorter would come at the same time. He was most well known for being a champion of victims' rights, something that he spent literally years working on to try and create a balance between fair trials and rights for defendants. But still, you know, things like victims having a right to know how their case was proceeding. If someone is convicted of the crime against them, that they have a right to know when that person is being released from prison. These were things that were not done before Bill Van Riggenmorter came along. But he was also a conservative's conservative. And really, if you were a liberal, there was not a lot to like about Bill Van Riggenmorter. He was pretty unpersuadable on abortion, on same-sex marriage, on a permission for assisted suicide, and was really a vanguard in opposing those things. But he was actually quite beloved at the state capitol because part of the Van Riggenmorter style was he was a listener, that he said no matter how much we might disagree, that he would patiently listen to every side. And so, you know, when he died, conservatives and liberals alike said this was someone who was a true gentleman, who represented really the best of the process, regardless of what you thought of his views on the issues.
Definitely interesting to take that into account with everything that's been happening at the Capitol in the past 7 days.
Indeed.
Rick Pluta is Lansing Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network.
And Zoe Clark is the resident political junkie at Michigan Radio.